Pure Dog Talk is the podcast on purebred dogs. We talk to the legends in the sport and give you tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I'm here today with Joan Zielinski. She is an AKC judge of working, herding, toys, and part of non-sporting. She's also a noted St. Bernard breeder and someone who brings a lot of history in the sport to the conversation. So, Joan, welcome.
Thank you.
And we're going to talk a little bit today, Joan. I'd like to start with talking about what is discussed as the graying of the sport.
Okay. Well, this is not a new topic to me because I've been hearing about that ever since we got started in dogs in 1965. Everyone said, oh, what are we going to do? Our old breeders are dying or retiring from the sport. But then there always seemed to be some new ones coming up that showed some promise. And of course, you get lots of juniors who are all excited about dogs and then they get distracted by other things and going off to college and all that. So whether they come back to the sport or not after they've kind of set their path is a question. I do think that with the current restrictions on numbers of dogs a person can have, hampers the sport by having too many restrictions and regulations. However, when my husband Stan and I were establishing our kennel, we were met by regulations as well. And we live in King County, south of Seattle, and in that county we have a law that says you can only have three animals, period. I guess that includes goldfish, and I know it includes cats, right. And so we struggled with needing to have more than three dogs to establish a breeding program.
And this goes, that law in King County goes back to the 60s.
Exactly.
Wow.
And so we lived on two-thirds of an acre, and we gradually added to our number of dogs and always worried that animal control was going to come and find us. And a fellow St. Bernard owner felt it necessary to turn in three of us who had more than three dogs to animal control.
Wow.
But we always say we should thank him because we were already searching for a place where we could get a kennel license. And we finally found one, and the animal control was understanding enough to sell us seven dog licenses in a place where we're only supposed to have three. So the regulations, you have to work around, and we had to go to a hearing for the place we got. But we live in still. It's 9 acres and half an hour from downtown Seattle, and we wouldn't have probably hurried so much and gotten that place if it hadn't been for that other person in the breed, and who was felt it his responsibility to turn everybody in. Anyway, that wasn't very nice, but it worked out fine.
Alan, as you say, silver linings.
Exactly. And so the other two breeders who he also turned in, one had to move three times, but she finally got into a place that was grandfathered in with a kennel license. And today we have one of the few properties in King County that has a kennel license because they no longer give them.
So King County no longer gives kennel licenses at
exactly.
all? Exactly. Wow. When did that change? Because I don't remember that being the case.
It's probably been 15 years ago.
Right. This is the last time I was up there, so that makes sense.
And they'll give hobby breeders licenses, but anyway, so that's one of the problems with the graying of the sport is you have to work around the regulations, and there are ways to do it, and I know all kinds of people who have more than three dogs in King County.
Right.
They might let out three black dogs at a time and rotate them because no neighbor knows, and if they've got good neighbors, they're not going to make problems for them.
And so I think we talk about breeders, but also club members. You're a member of Puyallup Valley Dog Fanciers,
mm-hmm.
and I see our clubs also, the membership. What do you think that we can do to encourage new people to join our clubs?
Well, we need to be welcoming, and we need to be open. And when someone comes to a dog show, you need to invite them to come and attend the events that you have, which we do at Puyallup Valley Dog Fanciers. We have lots of people who join our club kind of on an exploratory basis, and some stick with us, and become really vital parts of the club, and some only join for the year and then move on and don't renew. We try to have interesting things go on at our club meetings, something that people would like to know about.
Right.
We've had PTSD people with their dogs. We've supported Prison mm-hmm. Partnership.
Which is an amazing program.
Yes, it is. We've done that, and we've had representatives from that with their service dogs come. And, you know, people are interested in that. We've had herding dog demonstrations. We've set up a ring out, had some ducks and some border collies, watch them work. Something of interest to a variety of people is what gets people involved in a club, a local St. Bernard club. We have a very successful St. Bernard club, probably the most active one in the country, actually, but we have weight pull, we have events, we have picnics, we have usually dinner with our meetings, and we rotate from house to house. And
oh, nice. I like that. We have it at members' houses.
Right.
I always like that so much better than restaurants.
Instead of just a meeting hall somewhere. So it makes a feeling of, I don't want to miss out because everybody's going to have a good time. So that becomes a really good thing to get young people involved. So we've had lots of junior handlers who've later, mm-hmm. now they belong to the club, and they're the workers now.
We get
to sit back and relax a little bit.
Now that
we're all gray. And so I know that registrations have been down at AKC, but then I understand they've taken a little bit of an uptick. So hopefully that's going to improve. But yeah, I think that just like every generation says, I don't know what's going on with these young people. Well, I think that this is the case with dogs too. I think people are always going to love dogs. And if we can just get them to stick with us past the 5-year mark, and it seems like if you're in it for longer than 5 years, you're in it for your lifetime. And so we hope that happens.
Okay, so you mentioned again St. Bernard's. I wanted to talk about your St. Bernard's. You've been doing this for a very, very long time.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of history in the breed. And so give us a little bit of a 411. Give us a little idea about how you started in St. Bernard's, why you started in St. Bernard's,
okay.
and how you've seen the breed develop in the course of the last 50 years.
Well, I'm currently the president of the St. Bernard Club of America, and my husband Stan has been the president. He was 20 years ago for 4 years, 4 terms.
So four terms is more like 8 years.
well, it is now. Now we can only be for 4 years, and then we're out for a year if we don't. Anyhow, so we're the only husband-wife team that's been president of the National Club. And so it's been a team effort for Stan and me. The way we got started in St. Bernard's was that originally Stan was in the Veterinary Corps in the Air Force before I even knew him. And he always was involved with dogs and always had a dog. Well, his dad was a career Army man. They moved from post to post to post.
Mm-hmm.
But his constant was his Cocker Spaniel Freckles. So he always had a dog. And then when he got drafted into the Air Force and wanted to be in the Vet Corps and had intended to go to vet school, and as he started to work with the people who brought their animals in, he thought, well, I just love the animals, but I'm not so sure about some of the people. So
happens to a lot of us.
Yeah. So he became an engineer instead, where he didn't have to, he's quiet and mm-hmm. doesn't have to be around as many people, but he still always has loved the dogs and cats. So he wanted an Irish wolfhound. He knew he wanted a big dog. We looked around at Irish wolfhound advertisements and everything, but we certainly couldn't find any in this area.
Interesting.
And so he got a Dog World magazine that you can buy at the pet stores, and he found an ad for Irish wolfhounds in Pennsylvania. And he wrote to this guy, who happened to be Sam Ewing.
Oh, my gosh.
That
in and of itself, I don't mean to interrupt your story, but that in and of itself, think about the way our fancy thinks about breeders today. And here's Sam Ewing, one of the most successful Irish Wolfhound breeders ever.
Yeah.
And he's advertising in Dog World.
Right.
And that's what brought you to the sport.
Exactly.
And today, we would be hung, beheaded, marched through, put in stockades as breeders if we were to advertise in such a plebeian way.
Right, well.
And so I think that's an interesting commentary.
Yeah, well, so Stan wrote to him, and he sent us all these brochures and how he'd gotten these dogs from Ireland and everything, and I thought, Well, he just sort of seemed kind of pushy to me, and I thought, well, how are we going to, not that we would know anything about Irish wolfhounds anyhow, but if we saw them, but I thought, well, we have four little kids, they need to be good with kids, how do I know what they're going to be like? We get one clear from Pennsylvania? So we didn't do that. And you wonder what would have happened had we done that.
Right, right.
Anyway, and Stan actually judged in Pennsylvania, and that guy remembered writing to Stan.
Oh, my gosh.
Sam Ewing did. So anyway, we didn't get one from Sam Ewing. Pardon us. And we thought of other big breeds, and I thought of a Dane. And Stan said, what would you think of a St. Bernard? And I said, well, I hear they're good with kids. And I thought, they'd probably eat about as much as a Clydesdale horse. So we thought about that, and we looked at ads in the newspaper,
yes.
And we finally found there was a litter of 12 in West Seattle, and we went to see them, and there were about half boys and half girls, and we decided we would get a boy, and we narrowed it down to two, not that we knew what we were doing, but the lady, it was their first litter, and she said, well, between these two, they're supposed to have a short nose. So I remember her distinctly down in their basement holding up these two boys facing one another, and we chose the one with the shorter nose.
Oh, my gosh.
He didn't have a short nose.
No.
But
it's shorter.
Shorter.
There's a litter evaluation concept right there,
right.
Guys. Just because it's shorter than the other doesn't make it right.
Well, he ended up being such a wonderful dog because he became the first champion UD dog in the history of the breed.
Oh, my.
And Stan worked with him in obedience, and he was so willing to do anything for Stan and created our love for the breed because he was so loyal. He would do anything Stan wanted him to do, including when he was getting ready for his UD work. He put the dumbbells down on the pegboard, trying to make them all look alike, but one wasn't hooked down, and he would say, Bozo, take it, and he went over and he ripped that sucker off that pegboard. Because Dad wanted him to bring him a dumbbell.
Oh,
so it was just so fun to watch that. And, you know, one thing led to another. And, of course, we always say they're like potato chips. You can't just have one. And we took him down to the Golden Gate Kennel Club bench show, where we sat for 2 days on the bench with our four kids and got to meet other people at the bench show, which is still in existence.
It is.
Seattle used to have a bench show, too, but I kind of miss those. Anyway, we were thinking of another one, and Bozo was 2.5 years old, and we did get a female from there, from a litter down in California. Co-breeder was Roy Stenmark.
Oh, my gosh.
And she had Subira in her, so Lillian Buell was there on the bench directing us, and we got Mandy, the smartest St. Bernard. We got her from this litter. We weren't sure we were going to get one because the stud dog owner might take one. And he finally decided he wouldn't take one, so we got her. And she became a champion with a CDX. So that was so fun. We decided, well, why don't we breed our own?
Let's make babies.
That was a lot harder. It was so easy with the first two. Champion, champion, CDX, UD, nothing to it. Well, anyway, finally, we took this puppy bitch that we got. And then we also inherited one that was going to go to a puppy mill breeder guy that we said we've got to rescue her. So we had three. We had Bozo and Mandy and then Gretchen. Gretchen with the airplane ears, with hematomas in her ears. And we took all three of them down to Sanctuary Woods Kennels in Oregon. When we got that puppy from California, we drove right past the turnoff to Sanctuary Woods Kennels.
And Sanctuary Woods, B9.
Beatrice Nye. Oh, the Grand Dame.
Yes, absolutely.
Go ahead.
I grew up right down the road from Drake.
Yeah.
My father knew B9 because he was a timber cruiser. And
oh,
he
yes.
took us there when I was a little kid.
Oh,
so
fun.
I got to meet B9.
Oh, well, she was
yes.
such a wonderful
Amazing.
Person. But you know why we didn't stop there? She was too famous. She wouldn't want to sell a dog to somebody like us because we didn't know what we were doing. Well, when we had then three, we went down to visit her because somebody had told us with our male, who had Schwarzwaldhoff stuff in the pedigree, you can breed him to anybody you want to as long as they have hip x-rays and they're not Sanctuary Woods dogs. Well, when we went down to that bench show in California, those dogs in the ring looked pretty good to me, and they were Sanctuary Woods dogs. And I thought, what was she talking about? She led us astray, that woman, owned the stud dog. So we decided we would take those three dogs down to Bees and go see her dogs. And she met us out in the driveway. She knew who all of our dogs were, and she knew what their pedigrees were. And I thought, how do you know that? Well, now I know that you can do that, but she was just like a magician. And there she was standing in her driveway, and peacocks were running around in the driveway, and there were her two mules, Homer and Jethro, and the whole herd of cattle came up from the stream to say hello to her. It was sundown in the summer, and she said, well, hello there, hi. She talked to all of them, and then she said, okay, go back. And they all turned and went back down to the stream. And I thought, this woman is not to be believed. And then we went up to the kennel, and oh my gosh, we were surrounded by all these friendly dogs with beautiful heads and roughs and smooths, and was like, wow. And as we got back in the car to go back down to our camping spot, halfway down the Smith River Road, we were reflecting on those dogs we had just seen. Stan said, do you realize that some of the dogs that aren't the best up there are better than anything that's being shown in the ring now? And I said, yes, I do. And we just missed seeing Gulliver by about 6 months. But we saw these other fabulous dogs. I remember I was told that we should see a dog named Fortitude, and so I asked Bea if I could go in and see Fortitude, and she said, oh yeah, she was busy feeding the other dogs, and she said, just go in that pen over there, and there were about six St. Bernards in there, and I went, you're going to trust me to just go in there by myself while you're running around feeding these other dogs? And I went in, and here was this dog with this massive big head, very dark in color, these eyes that would just look in my eyes. And I remember I was wearing this orange sweatshirt that had a hood with those strings that you could tighten. And all of them wanted to be petted. They were all leaning up against me, and I'm petting them all. And I said, Fortitude. And he walked over to me and sat down and wanted me to pet him. And I petted him on his head. And I went to get up, and he grabbed my strings of my sweatshirt and pulled me to get back and pet him some more.
What a sweet story.
I know. And I said, oh, be this dog. She said, well, fortunately, he has the dignity to keep his faults to himself. And I said, what are his faults? Well, he was very short-legged and fiddle-fronted. And his two daughters, out of two different bitches, went best opposite at the National when they were lots more St. Bernards being shown. One was champion Sanctuary Woods Cleona, who was best opposite sex three times at the National. And then we had the pleasure of showing champion Sanctuary Woods Litany to best of breed over 360 St. Bernards.
Wow.
And that was another daughter of his. So, anyway.
Right. He was a very, very famous, not just in our area, but within Green and worldwide.
People were clamoring for her dogs from every corner of the earth. And she said, well, I'm not going to send something good over to Italy, or it's going to be bred to something bad after all my hard work. But people knew her all over the world, and she was just an amazing small little woman, about 5'2", with her white hair, and she would wear little Snoopy boots, kids' boots, on her feet to run around that kennel, and she had very bad arthritis in her hands. She would take these 2 5-gallon buckets full of dog food and put them over her arms and buzz around. She charmed everybody because she had little papillons bouncing around that her granddaughter had wanted, and we later got papillons from her too. And she had the first champion mountain dog in the country.
Bernese Mountain Dogs.
Yep.
When I went, she had Bernese Mountain Dogs. She said the Saints and the Papillons.
Right.
Incredible.
And so we showed, one day when Stan was a handler, we had Sanctuary Woods How Comes It, the St. Bernard, Sanctuary Woods Millionaire, the Papillon, and Sanctuary Woods Copyright, the Bernese Mountain Dog. And we took them to the dog show in Olympia, and it was our pleasure to call Bea and tell her that Copyright had gotten a major and was almost finished with his championship, and Millionaire the Papillon had gotten best of winners, and that How Comes It, who was almost 8 years old and he'd been living at the kennel, finished his championship under Merce Crescent. It was so fun.
Very cool day.
Yeah.
Very cool
so
day.
She said, oh, I thought he was getting too old. I didn't think he'd ever finish. Anyway, that was fun.
Very fun.
Mm-hmm.
So, talking about breeders like Bea, those kinds of kennel setups are really hard to find. we were going to talk about Laskiti Island and the St. Bernards of Laskiti Island. Mm-hmm. And we have on our website, you guys will get to see the article from Tiki.
Mm-hmm.
But talk to me a little bit about Tiki in relation or in comparison, or if you can think about between her and Bee.
Well,
because to me, in my mind, they seem similar.
Oh, they're very similar. They both have the same artistic eye. They both raise their dogs in natural conditions. We always think that Tiki, who got into St. Bernard's at the age of 17, is like a reincarnation of Beatrice Nye.
Okay, that just gave me goosebumps for real.
Yeah. We are so fortunate to have Tiki in the breed because she's young, she has a vision, she is not kennel blind, she sees what her dogs need, she looks to their health, she doesn't have problems like epilepsy with hers. Not all of hers are perfect, but she knows that. And she knows that, and she knows how to work the problem. Right. Now, just as another comparison, Beatrice Knight used to live in San Diego before they moved up to Sanctuary Woods Kennels in Oregon when she married Bill. And she used to go to the zoo, and she used to draw all the animals. And they got made into books that were used in the San Diego public school system for years.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yes. And she then, one day we're sitting in her garden, and she's telling me about this lily that she developed.
She developed a type of lily.
Uh-huh. And she had all these flowers, different kinds of flowers that she enjoyed. And I said, I didn't know you raised flowers. She said, I've raised just about everything except hell. So here's the artistic bee who saw the beauty in little flowers or big dogs, and she could analyze them. And here's Tiki, who has such an artistic eye. She's such a wonderful photographer. I don't think she knows it.
Wow.
But the pictures that that woman takes ought to be in a photography book. So they both have this artistic sense. I remember that Tiki's mother, Tiki was 17, and Tiki wanted a big dog, and she thought of Newfoundlands, but she couldn't find any Newfoundland breeders on Vancouver Island from the remote island where she lives. And she thought, well, you know, I've heard about this St. Bernard guy over there that had Yondo, who Stan and I each put up Best of Breed at the National different years. And so she contacted him, and he had a litter sired by one of our males. So she got a puppy, bitch, from that, and she waited till she was 2 years old and then went back to Brian, which a lot of people don't do. They think they're going to come up with something better by going to some total outcross. Well, she went back to the breeder and said, I'd like to breed her. And Brian looked at her and went, whoa, she looks really good. Because she'd been running around on that island, getting her muscles and her development was really good. And so she bred her to a dog that Brian had and produced her first litter. And there were three or four champions in that litter. And Tiki has a hard time getting to shows, which is how Marty got in the picture. So then she brought one of those down to Seattle Kennel Club, her first dog show.
Oh,
she gets a major. And she walks in, and she's wearing a black skirt, a gray jacket, hair parted in the middle.
Right.
Grew up on that island, born on that island, walks in the ring. And I don't know how that girl knew how to show a dog, but it was just natural.
Had never had a handling class.
Loose lead, trotted around that ring, best of winners. Her mother had contacted me before they came down. It was a Seattle Kennel Club show in February. Weather was terrible. And she said, I understand you have a litter of puppies, 5 weeks old. And I said, we do. Would it be okay if we came to see them? And I said, oh, I'd love to. It's the first time we met Tiki or her mother. Her mother had just learned to drive, so they had a friend from the island drive them down. And I said, where are you staying? She said, well, we're camped over at Saltwater State Park in a tent. I said, what? The weather's terrible. Would you like to stay at our house? Because we've got plenty of room. And she said, oh, no, thank you. We're quite cozy when the dogs come in the tent with us.
Wow.
Okay, so come on over and see the dogs. Well, we had this five puppies and that were 5 weeks old. And Stan didn't put away his favorite because it was a half mask. So what novice is going to pick a half mask, right? Usually we put somebody aside if we want that one to be kept. And Tiki sat right down, 5 weeks old, goes, oh, this one. And Stan was in the back room and he came out and I said, Tiki's interested in this puppy. He said, my puppy? I was going to keep that puppy. Well, we kept two others in that litter, and they both finished their championships, like the day after the national and all that stuff. But Tiki said, how much would you want for this puppy? And I think at that time we were charging that. $900, but I thought, you know, this girl seems to be really in earnest that she wants to do something good. I said, would $500 be okay? And she said, okay, and we'll come back when they're 9 weeks old and get her. So they named her Nelda, and they came back, and I've got a picture of Tiki and her mother and the puppy, and I didn't know till 1 year later, because I had no idea what their lifestyle was like on Leskiti Island or how they earned a living, that she borrowed the $500 from someone on the island and worked for an entire year to pay him back. And she didn't tell us. Someone else told us. She never did tell us. And she split rails for fences and made cedar shingles for people and weeded gardens.
Once again, I have goosebumps. Joan, I would love to continue talking about this for like hours, but literally, I've been 5 minutes. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're really welcome.
This has been wonderful.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.